What's going on, everybody? This is Black Men Sundays. I'm your host, Corey Sylvester Murray. We're talking about generational wealth, mental health, finance, and business. It's a Black Man Sunday. Time to put all childish things away. I refuse to be the man I was yesterday. Gotta put my best foot forward and elevate. And before we introduce today's guest, my brother Eric from Huntsville, aka Hunts Vegas, who do you have for our Black Men Sunday Spotlight, my brother?
Hey, Corey, I appreciate that warm introduction. Hey, man, I got something for you guys today. I bet you didn't know that the first woman to own a bank wasn't white, but a Black woman named Maggie Lena Walker. Now, she was born in 1864 to a former enslaved mother. Maggie didn't just break barriers. She bulldozed over them. And at a time when most Black folks couldn't even enter banks, she built her own. Now, in 1903, she founded the St. Luke Perry Penny Savings Bank, giving Blacks the power to save, buy homes, and invest in their future when no one else would. Now, Maggie didn't just stop there. She ran newspapers. She opened department stores. She hired Black women when no one else would. Now, through the independent order of a St. Luke, which is her bank, she taught financial literacy, empowerment, and self-reliance to thousands. Now, while Wall Street was locking us out, Maggie was teaching us how to build our own. But if you ask history teachers about her, you just watch the silence. They buried her legacy because it proves we have always been builders. We have always been bosses. That's my spotlight tonight. Miss Maggie Lanier Walker. Now back to you.
Yeah, that's the spotlight. That's what I'm talking about right there, man. I'm wondering where you get some of these spotlights from, man.
Just research, you know, just looking around, and you'd be surprised. You know, it's a lot of information about us. But, you know, with the current administration, they're trying to bury everything. And you know why? They afraid of the truth, man. There's a lot of things that we have, and I'm going to continue to find them. And cover them and present it to you guys.
And I always appreciate when you send those pictures, because it's one thing, you know, all the honeys want to see you anyway. But it's nice to see the photo of who you're talking about, you know.
Right.
So I appreciate that, my brother.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. Oh, and don't forget, man, it's almost, you know, we July about to be August, so football season coming up. You know, y'all
Hey,
Alabama A&M boys, I'm hearing we're coming to
absolutely.
y'all this year.
Hey, man, we're going to be ready, man. We have a new coach and a new staff. So, hey, we're ready.
Yeah, well, y'all need a new band too.
Oh, we don't need a new band, man. Y'all band, well, we ain't going to get into that. But our band is straight, man. Y'all didn't come to the Battle of the Bands. Where was FAMU at? Everybody else was there.
Hey, well, hey, man, the Hunt going to be there this year. We're going to represent and show y'all how we do. We're going to be in Hunts, Vegas. Hopefully,
Okay.
I can make that trip. Hopefully, we can
Hey.
fire that grill up so we can see what you've
Absolutely.
been talking about all these years on Black Men Sunday, my brother.
Absolutely. And let you see what Huntsville is all about.
That's right, man. Well, hey, man, let's go on and introduce today's guest, my brother.
Okay.
Definitely, man. We talking to Dr. Latanya White. This sister's a FAMU rattler, by the way, Eric.
Uh-oh.
That's right.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, and we know our show's about creating generational wealth. We're in season 7, episode 2. Don't be surprised. The show's called Black Men Sundays, but you're seeing two sisters in a row. So let's run down this sister's credentials before we even talk to her real quick. This sister is the creator of Dynastic Wealth. She's an entrepreneurship educator. She helped over 10,000 Black entrepreneurs begin their journey. So I'm kind of, you know, I'm gonna need some tips today. You know what? As soon as we start this conversation, we just going to drop you right in that fish grease, because, you know, on Black Men Sundays, we want this generational wealth, but there's a lot of generational trauma. We deal with mental trauma. We dealing with all kind of wealth issues. And then I'm hearing that some of the wealth teachings that we've been taught is fragmented. And it's like, well, I can't be fragmented. And I'm saving up all this money for it to only last one generation. So without further ado, Dr. Latanya White, welcome to Black Men Sunday. Sister, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Rattler?
Oh, I'm good, Rattler. Good to have you on here. And I just want to jump right in because, you know, you helped over 10,000 Black entrepreneurs begin their journey to economic mobility. So we're going to need to start right there. We're going to need some tips. how you got that going, how you were successful. Let's go.
Yes, and I appreciate, the opportunity. One of the things I really want to elevate is, again, congratulations on 7 seasons. We know that, if you are a believer, that that number has a lot of significance. And when we're talking about generational wealth, one of the things that I've done is in my entrepreneurship teaching, entrepreneurship research, and business coaching, is really looked at what generational wealth really means in other contexts, right? So I'm looking forward to unpacking these 7 pillars of wealth transfer and where generational wealth plays a role in that. But how I got started, I taught, and I'm a product of the School of Business and Industry at FAMU. I taught at FAMU. I taught at SBI. So I taught entrepreneurship, principles of management, and professional leadership development courses. You remember the students when we would be walking across campus in our suits? So I taught one of those classes, but over the course of 11 years at FAMU, I literally taught 6,000 students. They may have come through the entrepreneurship class or come through the management class or come through the PLD course, but I was always instilling the entrepreneurial mindset. Now I had to get to the place where I accepted that not everybody's gonna be an entrepreneur, but I knew that I would be doing students a disservice if I didn't even say, this is the connection, this is the correlation between entrepreneurship and what it could mean for your family as far as wealth is concerned. And that's a part of what I really dug deep into when I went to pursue my doctoral degree, was I needed to be able to prove to administrators and other faculty members and staff members that there is a strong connection between owning a business and wealth and what that means for the Black wealth experience. So that's what I studied. I love that Eric was talking about Maggie Lena Walker. I studied 150 years of Black wealth history, and there's a book that I referenced in my doctoral research that I think y'all would like. It's the title of it is The Encyclopedia of African American Business History. So that'll carry y'all for the next 10 seasons if you needed to. But Dr. Juliet Walker is the editor. She's listed as the author of that book. So that's a little bit about how I got to that 10,000. A lot of it was spent teaching entrepreneurship. I also am a or was a certified business analyst with the Small Business Development Center. I've worked with the Minority Business Development Agency. I've consulted and trained and spoke on dynastic wealth for FAMU, Princeton, Morehouse, Prosperity Now. So really finding the pockets where we are, where Black founders are, where Black wealth creators are, and hoping to just kind of shed this more strategic insight on what wealth transfer is, and that generational wealth, quiet as it's kept, is only the beginning. Like, that's not where it ends. That's literally the beginning of the 7 pillars, 7 steps to building a family dynasty.
Okay. And let's talk about that because you're the creator of dynastic wealth. Let's talk about what that is, the impetus and all that, and give us some tips for us to get set up. Because, like I said, a lot of us, we have stocks, we have bonds, we do crypto, we have properties, we have financial advisors, we have accountants, So we think, okay, we doing pretty good, but let's go.
I was doing this research, right? I came across these articles and these books, and I was like, this is how they're doing it. Literally, Corey, the blueprint. They talked about all these different forms of wealth and prenuptial agreements and family trust and all these things. And I said, well, this is the blueprint, but why won't it work in my family? Why can't these things be applied to my relationship, my personal relationship with money, or my family's relationship with money? And that's when I had to step back and be like, oh, it's because I'm Black. Like, let's be for real about this thing and how my ancestors, my elders, and what their lived experience has been Never mind, right? The impact of chattel slavery. We can talk about the failure of the Freedmen's Bank and how that makes me nervous to walk into a bank, why that makes me mistrustful of financial services providers, even if they do look like me, because there were ancestors who had, been newly freed from being enslaved and 10 years later had a collective wealth of $3 million in 1865. Now, because $3 million in 2025 is a lot of money, but we talk about $3 million in 1865 that was lost, and there was no recourse that I could not get back. The National Museum of African American History, they have on their searchablemuseum.com, you can do a search for Freedmen's Bank, you could do a search for wealth, for business entrepreneurship. And when it comes back about the Freedmen's Bank and this $3 million of Black wealth that was lost 150 years ago, only 62% of people back then were able to recoup any of that money. Now, what that means for me in 2025, and I hadn't had that experience, that still means I have a deep mistrust, or I can have a deep mistrust of the financial services industry. So when we're talking about passing down wealth, right, I need to be able to speak their language. But if I have this trauma that's holding me back from engaging with those industries, how can I talk to my aunt or my daughter or my mom about what I want to leave in my will? Because I also need to reconcile with my own mortality, right? I also need to be prepared that I'm going to leave this earth at some point, but I want to make sure that my family's in a better position than that I leave them in a better position that they were in when I was here. And so this thing about dynastic wealth is we have to first heal. We have to name and heal some of the money trauma, financial trauma that we have personally, and of course, translate that healing into how we're engaging with our other family members before we can say, okay, Corey, this is the beneficiary of my stock portfolio. This is who I've named in my estate, right? So that's just one form of wealth. There are actually five forms of wealth that makes up dynastic wealth. We can talk about spiritual wealth and family values and family identity. There is the wealth of knowledge, like whose name is on the deed to Big Mama's house? And right, where is the family property held? What are the family assets and family recipes? That's wealth that we've been conditioned to think is not. So I see you co-signing on that one. We go talk more about the food that built America and Kellogg's cereal and Heinz ketchup and, oh, dare I say, Jack Daniels, right? These are family recipes that have either been stolen from us or we've been told that they aren't valuable so someone else can capitalize on it. That's a part of what we do when I work with families to really kind of document what dynastic wealth will look like for their family. So we got financial wealth, spiritual wealth, the wealth of knowledge. There's intellectual wealth, and that's, our investment in you and you becoming the best version of yourself, really investing in your passion, skills, and abilities. So that turns into financial wealth. And then that last form is relational wealth. So I can take my relationships with folks at Princeton or with folks at Prosperity Now and open up doors for people in my family. And that's we talk sometimes about nepotism and favoritism, but that's how the money is kept in the family. Like, let's pass down the relationships as well. So once we have done that, understanding this wealth history and our relationship with wealth, we can build these five forms of wealth. And then we get into protecting the dynasty, understanding the cash value insurance policies that make sense. What does the dynasty trust or this generation skipping trust? What could that look like? What's our family constitution? What does it say about how we give people access to the wealth that we've created and protected? And I'll hold the last part because it's a ringer.
Nah, you got me over here taking notes, girl. I'm over here like, what? Slow down. Like, I thought I dropped you in the fish grease. You got me in there. Hold on. So, real quick, because I'm loving this conversation. So, because that was going to be my next question, the five forms of wealth. So, you said intellectual, financial, wisdom, relational. What was the other one?
Spiritual, spiritual,
Wow. Okay. We're going to get into
spiritual.
all of that. And, wow. Okay. But let's go back to the dynastic wealth creation as
Yes.
far as, because you said how you established it and the reasons why it was set up. But for people that are saying, okay, I need some tips. I
Sure.
need some steps. I have some money. I have a house. I have stocks. I have bonds. I have what my financial advisor, my accountant is telling me I need to make sure that my home is safe, my family is safe, that I can pass this on. So, what tips can you give us from a dynastic wealth perspective that can, for people that want to get started, like what tips can we take?
I appreciate that question, especially having listened to the episode with Ms. Davis, the wealth manager, and that family CEO mindset. One of the things about generational wealth is that we're usually thinking about Corey's household, Latanya's household. Dynastic wealth is really Latanya's household, her sister's household, her cousin's households, auntie and uncle them household, and getting everybody in alignment. Now, I am not going to sit here and BS you and say it's going to be easy because I just talked about the trauma, right? So, the first step in getting started, one of the things that I found, because I work with my family and really kind of orchestrated this thing, we've been doing this for 4 years, off and on for 4 years. And everybody got on the same page when we read this book called The Whiteness of Wealth by Dorothy A. Brown. She's a professor at Emory University. So as crazy as it sounds, the first step is to read this book called The Whiteness of Wealth. I actually have a quiz that may help, kind of start the conversations, but the real idea with dynastic wealth is it's not just your household. This is about the collective family identity because when we talk about the Rockefellers, we are not just talking about the people that live in one house. We're talking about the descendants of John D. Rockefeller and his wife, right? When we're talking about the Walton family or the Walmart family who just reached dynastic status 10 years ago, we're talking about the descendants of Sam Walton. So it's not just Latanya and Sparrow, and it's my daughter's name. This Latanya as a part of the collective family. So dynastic wealth, that first step is okay, let's get this roadmap quiz. Let's see where we are. How many other family members have this inkling of wanting to get on the same page? And now maybe the two of us can let's read The Whiteness of Wealth. Let's get this knowledge for ourselves, and then it can start to impact how we engage with the family. And that's one of the things that I help to orchestrate is, who do you already have buy-in from in the family? Because those can be like your stakes in the ground. You're gonna need more than one generation involved. Right. And to the extent that you can get someone from each generation to say, I support it, we should be doing it, then that can help to keep the esteem, right? Because it's emotionally exhausting to try to carry a family into this place of being aligned and being on the same page about money and wealth.
Wow, that's great information. Yeah, because my next question for you, and I'll get to the quiz in a second, but for brothers listening, they're like, we got to be real. We're not about to sit down the whole unless it's Thanksgiving or Christmas and they know the checks is coming. We're not about to sit down as a full family. Somebody ain't gonna be able to make it. Somebody's not gonna be available for the Zoom. How can we successfully start this conversation when you have different generations in the room? You have the millennials in the room, you have the Generation Xers in the room, you have the,
Baby
I
boomers.
mean, come on. Yeah. And so they're looking at, the baby boomers looking at the millennials like, y'all don't know nothing. All y'all went through was the pandemic and y'all barely went through that. Y'all ain't know how to stay at the house. Like, we could have did that. But I'm just saying, though, from that point of view, from a simplistic perspective, then you want to have a conversation about the complexities of income and the transferring of wealth, because I feel like the problem that I have with the black community, it's hard enough for us to find out what pre-existing health conditions we have in our immediate family. So how are we gonna have a conversation on the financial level and we can't even get the health right? And then because the only time I feel like we get the health right is when you get sick, and then they're gonna pull you aside and say, your cousin or so and so had what you had, do X, Y, and Z, and you'd be all right. But why you couldn't tell me that when I had the perfect health? So how are we gonna take it from that perspective now? We're talking about sharing money when, I mean, on a simplistic level, Thanksgiving comes up. Oh, I gotta lose 50 pounds. I can't have grandma cracking on me the whole time, calling me chubby and all that. So the last thing I want to do is share that I may have had a financial loss. I may have had a financial issue, but I don't want to be clown, quote unquote, in the family. And then, I know I'm hitting you with like the double questions, but I mean, you went to FAMU. You went to FAMU, so you understand how to answer compound questions. And then on the back end of that conversation, how do we get the family to believe in us and say, okay, because we talked about the family CEO, we struggling to figure out who that person is outside of, well, you make the most money, you have the best degree, you have the PhD, so we just gonna put it in your hands. But then you may have a cousin that says, well, I'm working on my PhD, I might want to be that person. So let's go.
Exactly. I mean, and that's all. I mean, really, really great questions. The first part about, we usually only get together at Thanksgiving. I hate to say this, but we get together at Thanksgiving, we get together at holidays and funerals. What we don't want to continue to do is only see each other when someone is transitioning. Because by then, I remember when my great grandmother passed away. Nobody knew you know how you were like co-signing on the family recipes? Nobody has the biscuit recipe. Like, as crazy as it sounds, nobody has the recipe. But how many of us were in these group chats, right? You be dropping in there what you bet on when you were doing the betting on the app. So why we can't drop in there? Well, I was just talking to this sister from FAMU, and she was saying this, that, and the third. We could drop those kinds of things in the group chat as well. We can also be dropping these kinds of, just like we'll share Instagram memes with each other, send those back and forth on Instagram or X Threads. We can start sharing things that have been validated, right? Because it's a lot of people in these internet streets, but we can also be sharing that kind of information with each other. Now, we also have to give grace. You're gonna have to hold space for not everybody is gonna be at the same place where you are on the journey, right? Because you at this point, you're Paul on the road to Damascus, but somebody else is still Peter who gonna be betraying somebody 3 times before the rooster crows. You know what I'm saying? Like, just honoring everybody's place and where they are in different spaces on the journey. So holding that kind of grace for someone, I hope that answers the first question, is really leveraging where we are already connected. We're already connected in a group chat. We're already connected on Instagram or social media, sharing memes and things of that nature. And then the second part of it, especially with learning about your own health history, in the middle of a health crisis. And to your question, why didn't somebody tell me that? Because of our trauma. Because we've been socialized, right? We've been conditioned that we really have been told that there is nobody that cares about us. Like, we can't even trust our own people. And if we look into the roots and the origin and the basis of that's because collectively, our power, and I think Eric said this earlier when he was in the spotlight, they keep the truth from us because they're afraid of our power. And if we continue to buy into those mistruths, those lies about, we all crabs in a barrel, this, that, then we'll never get to get to this place where we are literally collectively using our power. And that happens and that begins in the family. The easiest way to destroy something is to tear apart the foundation. We know this, right? So we tear apart the foundation of a family. Surely the community is going to fall apart. Surely the universities are going to fall apart. The financial institutions are going to fall apart. And so, as leaders of the household, as leaders of the family, at some point it has to get to where I'm standing in the gap for my family, for my ancestors, and for my heirs. And whatever it takes to fill this gap with what power I have on this earth right now, I'm gonna do it. And I know the resources to get to it. I know the experts to get to it. I know the books to start doing that.
Okay. All right. Hey, I'm gonna let the fellas jump in. All right, fellas, you know what it is. Black Men Sunday. Say your name, your state, city you're representing. We talking to Dr. Latanya White, PhD, fam. You in the house. Let's go, fellas.
Good afternoon, Ms. White. This is Gary Johnson out of Jacksonville, Florida. It's good to see another SBIN in the house. I actually graduated from there as well. So, yeah. So, you mentioned earlier about the book. I think that you put a lot of emphasis and a lot of great information on basically just having family come together. I know that a lot of times it's hard to get a lot of us together and really talk about financial parts that we need to basically get done to grow as a family as a whole. You mentioned that book, it is called, you said it's called Whiteness of Wealth. Okay. So yeah, so I definitely want to pick that up and I'll read about it. But I guess I just want to get a little bit more information on what type of tips that you can kind of give me as far as how to further approach that, because I actually deal with that myself with my family. We don't really get together like you said. It's always some type of either big event or some type of a holiday or something like that. So most of the time, it's a struggle to get us together. So, I guess, do you have any tips on what could be done to kind of basically broaden that and improve that?
That's a great question. I appreciate that. One thing I want to make sure to start my answer with, Gary, is while you might be the catalyst, you should not be doing it all by yourself. And so what the answer to your question is, okay, take a, do a scan of the family, right? Who's the one that's always in your face taking pictures? Who's the one that's always doing, they're always on their phone? Or who's the bookworm in the family? So once you start to really identify what people's natural skills are, for lack of a better term, or the things that they gravitate towards, lean into that. So one of my aunts, we're always like, not another picture, auntie, right? But then we go back when my grandmother passed, we were like, I don't even remember taking that picture. So now that person becomes, say, the family historian. You have the bookworm in the family. You might say, hey, read this book, or have you ever read this book? And maybe the two of you are reading it together and you are able to start the conversation with the broader family in parallel with the bookworm. So really look at what's the skill set, what's the interest or the abilities of members of the rest of the members of the family, and then pull them in based on what they've already shown themselves to like to do. Because one of the things that I learned when I was introducing my family to the whiteness of wealth, I was always talking about wealth from an entrepreneur perspective, right? But I was the only entrepreneur in the family. So nobody else felt like they could relate to what I was talking about. It wasn't until I read The Whiteness of Wealth, I read it on my own. Sorry about that. I read it on my own. And what I recognized was there's all these other pillars of wealth: home ownership, higher education, elementary education, retirement, employment. And then I saw that there was all of those pillars were represented by different members of my family. I had one aunt and uncle who were sending their child off to college. I had a cousin and his wife who were purchasing their home. My mom had just retired. So what I was able to then do was say, this particular chapter, I think you would really find value in that. But I had to allow everyone's interest to be a part of it instead of me just pushing the entrepreneurship side to it. So the way that I found that to work now when I'm working with families is the catalyst, like the person that's the point of contact, I need to work with you to help you identify, okay, they're always taking pictures. Let's pull them in on the family historian aspect of it. So really thinking about where are other people's natural talents that connect to this family gathering or getting the family on the same page.
Sounds good. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
For sure, for sure.
When I was looking at your bio, I said, what is this wealth roadmap quiz? What is that? So let's talk about that.
Yes. So, a question I get all the time is, where do I even start? Because a lot of people, we feel like we don't have anything. We don't have no money. We don't have no wealth. And what I need to talk to an estate planner about, at any point down the line. So the wealth roadmap quiz is really to help first pinpoint that, Corey, this job is not for you to do by yourself. It's really to help get you thinking about who else in my family, who else am I connected to? Because the other part of dynastic wealth is it doesn't always have to be your blood relatives, right? Maybe you don't even have kids. Maybe you don't want kids, but there is still a legacy that you're building that hopefully you want to impact someone else down the line. So the wealth roadmap quiz is really like, okay, where am I on the journey to not just building wealth, but protecting wealth? And who can I lean on? What circle can I build to help me do this work on that particular journey? There's a lot of emotional, I think Gary kind of got to it with his question. There's a lot of emotional labor involved with getting people on the same page about money and wealth and doing that under, right, having this financial trauma and this money trauma. So the wealth roadmap quiz really kind of points you into these different ways of how to navigate that. What should you be thinking about? And then what are some resources that may be valuable to you on the journey?
Got you. And for people listening, let's say I want to take this wealth roadmap quiz. Where can we access that?
It is dynasticwealth.online/roadmap quiz. That's
Okay.
the easiest place to find it. So, first question, what do your current family wealth conversations look like? Are you A, never talking about money? B, you started talking about it, but it still feels uncomfortable? Or C, you have regular conversations and you have shared financial goals?
Wow, okay. Let me get one more. Wow, that's no, but I'm saying that's heavy though, because
Yes.
from what I asked you with that compound question, like that's like difficult. I mean, we talking about fronting for the family picnic and all that, and we now we trying to open the bank account. It's like, whoa, that's a whole nother degree, but I get it.
That's a
You know what
big
I'm
one.
saying? And I'm glad we're having this conversation, because I mean, we in season seven.
Yeah.
This is the real conversation. So let's go over like one or two more.
The next one, and that's such a good point because the next question asks, what stage are you in personally, right? Because you still have your work to do. You got your healing to do, right? And then you also have your learning to do. So are you just started? Have you just started building wealth? Have you been working on it individually and now you're ready to involve your family? Or are you the financial go-to person and now you just need like some structure to help really kind of lead the family? So again, the roadmap quiz is to help get you thinking about, dang, where are we, right? How ready are we as a family? Are we just testing on the one? We just scrolling on the internet. Do you need, you're open and need more structure, or are you ready for deep guided transformation? I think that's the thing, right? Dynastic wealth, and this really is me leaning on having been in the classroom for 11 years. I taught millennials and Gen Z. Now, Gen Z ran me out the classroom. I'm gonna have to be honest about that. They ran me out the classroom. But having learned how to engage with different learning styles, you got visual learners, you have your introverts, you have your extroverts. Sometimes those people take up too much space. But a part of that guided transformation is how do we lean into the best versions of everybody's personality, everybody's learning style, and the things that make them hesitant. So that transformation and that guided transformation is you don't have to do it by yourself.
Great information. And one thing you mentioned was wealth preservation, because I see a lot of elders, about to retire, people moving back home. And I said, I'm gonna ask every guest in season seven, well, how do you, what do you do to, you set your wealth up, you set up your accounts, but then, your child or your grandkid moves back home and you may have to go back to work. How do you combat that with the dynastic wealth?
So a dynastic wealth is really about making, because now we're in this age where it's like that's the rich auntie or that's the rich uncle, right? What dynastic wealth does is it moves that wealth creator from being a family ATM into getting other members of the family to be wealth contributors. So yes, somebody might need to move back home, but you've been empowered and educated about how you can lean into and leverage your passion, skills, and abilities to generate financial wealth to go back into the family coffers or back into the family bank. We know there are a lot of other cultures that the way they build and preserve wealth is by everybody staying in the home, right? They live in the compound. They keep the expenses low, but they're stacking their coins. So it's not just because they're cheap or anything like that. It's their strategic. They're using those dollars that have been freed up from six different mortgages and putting it into these coffers. Maybe they're using a index universal life insurance policy to build up cash value that then they use to pull the money for the down payment off the next asset. So it's very strategic. And I think what I hope that dynastic wealth does in the training and coaching is to expose our families to the strategic upsides of what we have been conditioned, right, to look down upon in other wealth preservation perspectives.
Got you, got you. And before I got two more questions, but before I ask you those, I ask you the hard one now. Are you enjoying yourself on Black Men Sundays?
Oh my goodness, I love it. I didn't mean to get so like on my soapbox earlier, but I'm here for it.
Well, this, I mean, you're talking to Black men, it's Black Men Sundays, and we talking that talk. Like a lot of people, I think, like the authenticity of this conversation. This is how we really talk, you know what I'm saying? But before I continue, my brother, I see my brother Ray just jumped on. So if he got a question, go ahead, my brother, with that fly Black Men Sundays hat on. I love it.
Yes, sir. No, we got to represent, man. So, hey, Dr. Dwight, I'm Ray Simmons calling out of Rockledge. You guys hear me pretty well?
Yeah, we sure can. How you doing, Ray?
Okay. I'm great. I'm doing great. So, on this, I've been popping in and off, and excuse my voice. I'm getting over a cold right now. I had to run and get tea, so I might have missed a few things. But one question I have for you is regarding preserving wealth, like we were speaking of earlier. I go out and I teach first responders the budgeting. We teach them about budgeting. We teach them about credit repair. We teach them about investments and retirement accounts, 401k. So some of the things I talk about with them as far as preserving wealth, right? Once we get out of the debt budgeting cycle first. Some of those strategies are like, high yield savings accounts and our compound interest accounts, if you can find a good compound interest account also. So what do you think are, I guess, some other ideas or strategies that you yourself use or that you've taught, if that makes sense?
No, I love that question. Because a part of in that first pillar of wealth with financial wealth, it is making sure that your personal finances are intact and that you have personal financial stability. And so one thing about dynastic wealth is as the family gets involved, the fam every fam individual family member should be going through these personal finance lessons and things of that nature. And you also need your own individual estate plan. But to your question, definitely the high yield savings accounts, finding ways to not, I don't want to be as fundamental as living below your means, but leveraging, like I want to reframe it and leveraging every opportunity to generate income and revenue as possible. So not burning yourself out to have a side hustle or for two jobs, but let's really tap into what are you good at that we can automate, that we can monetize, that can become this passive income, but it's still adding value to the world. It's not just some something you found off the internet and you reselling it. It's actually adding value, but bringing in income as well. So I love what you're talking about with the high yield savings account. I'm a huge fan, huge, huge fan of whole life insurance policies, especially for people who struggle. Yeah, we do the debt saving, the snowball, and we do the savings plans, but sometimes people still need to be able to see that it's leaning towards something, right? That it's going to get me somewhere. And while the premiums on Index Universal Life and the cash value life insurance, those premiums are higher, they also are earning interest as well. And then that helps you to build your own bank so that when it's time for the family to come together to have a conversation about a family bank, you have people who are familiar with the experience, they know the language, and they can now be a point of contact or a liaison within the family for that insurance, those insurance needs. So I hope that adds some value to the work that you're already doing.
Absolutely. Thank you. That was a great answer. We had a recent get together, I say a month or two ago, this big Airbnb down here in Florida in Kissimmee. And it was the first opportunity I had to have them all together at once. And I say, hey, you know what? We usually don't talk about this. I know it's a taboo point in some households, but we need to all come up with some type of financial group chat. We're all in a family group chat anyway. So why
See?
can't we? Right. Why can't we incorporate financial literacy in that? And I'm that person in the family, you know, as of right now. And it's just, and listening to you throughout this entire episode, you have given some good strategies and ideas on how to approach that conversation, right? Because, you know, so you have some of those family members that, well, I need to see it work first before, you know what I'm saying? So you got those. So you, but I guess the hardest part, like I was saying, is taking that first step or that approach on how you want to begin that conversation. So I appreciate you coming on the show again and giving us some of those gems to help us transition into this, you know, new
Absolutely.
aspect of financial literacy.
Absolutely. I love it. And if I could share one more thing that was a recent reminder of like how difficult, like a personal reminder of how difficult this work can be to be like the go-to person. I have, and not everybody wants to be a part of it, right? It's different from, well, I'm gonna watch you doing it. And then maybe like you got people that's flat out like, I'm good. Like, nah, I'm good, right? And so I had to reconcile with that because we are here trying, when we think about everything that's happening around us, we need to be doing some different things from what we have been doing, but still, not everybody wants to be a part of it. So one of the things that literally it came to me like, I'm just going to have to talk to the individual households, like make sure to have, because I just talked to my mom the other day about, okay, do you have long-term care insurance, right? Because it's all gonna happen to us. And then I recognize like, well, I probably need to ask my aunt as well. And then I need to ask my other aunt and then have a conversation with her kids. So then when we do all come together, there is some point of reference where we know that everybody's covered, or we need to be prepared to have a conversation on how to make sure somebody's covered so that we don't get blindsided when something happens.
Great. Thank you again.
Before I let you go, Dr. Latanya White, I want to talk about these five forms of wealth because I feel like on our show, we talked about ways of achieving wealth. We've talked about ways of getting professional help to achieve wealth. But I mean, like you told me, the five forms of wealth are spiritual, intellectual, financial wisdom, and relational wealth. So obviously, we know the financial part. Let's talk about, I kind of want to touch on the relational and the spiritual. I feel like over 150 shows, we don't really touch on that. So let's go there.
I love the opportunity to do that. So spiritual wealth, this is another point of distinction. So generational wealth, as we understand it, is typically about what can you deposit into a bank, or what can it has a bottom line, it has a number that you can add up. Spiritual wealth is where we get to being more than about just money. We're talking about who are we as a family? What is the identity? What are the values that we live with, that we operate from, but we've never really articulated? We've never said it, right? It's just how we were raised. But where did that come from? And so spiritual wealth is when we're doing this work to, I dig deeper into our family history. So not just, the names that are on the family tree, but do we know those people? Like, do we know that this great uncle actually had a business? And maybe that's where I get my entrepreneurial spirit from. So spiritual wealth in the context of dynastic wealth is really unpacking the family wealth history. Who were the entrepreneurs? Who were the ones that owned their own homes? Do we still have those homes in the family? Do we know whose names are on the deeds to those homes, like into that property? And what we're really getting into is how do we want to show up in the world? How do we want our heirs, 3 generations from now, who we may never meet, what do we want them to know about us? Because so much of our identity and our history has been lost or is under erasure that we have to be in control of how that information gets documented and protected. Because literally, as I was doing my dissertation research, I studied first generation entrepreneurs. You literally had to say, like, click on the survey that you are first generation entrepreneurs. I get into the interview, 7 out of 10 of the entrepreneurs I interviewed said, "Oh, my mom had this side hustle, and my granddad did this thing." And I was like, "But you said you were a first generation entrepreneur." And they said, "Well, that's how I identified because I felt like I was starting from scratch. It wasn't that they hadn't inherited anything. It was that they didn't have any knowledge about what other people had gone through, what lessons other people had learned." And so there's wealth in that. And so that's really the point where we start talking about wealth preservation as more than just money. And that's spiritual wealth. Relational wealth is more, it's almost, it's kind of like social capital on a whole nother level. So relational wealth is where, so Howard University, they have this grant, and they're in their third year of this grant, the third year of this HBCU entrepreneurship conference. So my daughter is 10 years old, and she came with me to that conference. She came and she saw me speak. I introduced her to the conference organizer, to some other HBCU faculty members, because what relational wealth is making sure that our nieces, nephews, our mentees, like the people that we influence, can show up as their best selves in the spaces where we are already comfortable. We take for granted, right, the road that it took us to get over our fear of public speaking, or we take those things for granted, but how helpful and valuable would it have been if I had been in the room with a public speaker who's already in my family and I could learn from her or from their expertise on my journey to becoming something, something similar. Relational wealth is also really looking at leadership development and philanthropy. Like, we have to introduce our families to philanthropy at an earlier age. It doesn't have to be when we're in our 60s and 70s, because there's a real direct correlation between family wealth and philanthropy. And that's a whole nother episode, but we could talk about the Rockefeller Family Foundation, the Walton Family Foundation, all these other family foundations, because that's another place they're preserving their wealth.
Yeah, I love how you went there. We definitely have you back to talk about that. We've touched on it, but we didn't do a show on it. It was an element of a conversation that we were having. So I appreciate that. Wow. My last question for you is, because I've heard people discuss where they may talk financially in front of the family, but then I hear, you know what? I don't want the family knowing how much money I'm making. I ain't about to be the family ATM. You know what? They be done made me the family CEO. Y'all talking about that CEO mindset. Okay, that's cool, but they be done made me the CEO. Guess what? Hey, I need $20, Mr. CEO. You the big man in the family now. I need $100. You the ATM now. So how do we get over? Because I feel like that's still a form of trauma. Okay,
It
we
is.
done helped put you through school. We done helped you study. We done drove you to football practice, whatever, violin practice, whatever you do. It's like, okay, you're in that spot. We need some money. How do we get over that trauma to where it's more of a professional? Because I feel like on the real, if it was like a more professional setup with it, I feel like it would be a little easier to get into the conversation versus, okay, you got everybody in this room, we got a cookout, we got shirts made and all that. It's hard to have that conversation because not people ain't gonna keep it real. Oh, I'm making this. Are you say I got the Gucci on? I got the Gucci shoes, Gucci belt, da, 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 da. But can I can't, but I don't have $5 for you. But I'm just saying on a real level, how do you get past that to the mature, elevated, dynastic conversations?
So remember I mentioned that ringer earlier? I think the ringer is the answer to your question. So these families, and if I hadn't said it already, it takes three generations for a family to become a dynasty. So this ain't nothing that's going to happen overnight necessarily. Now, you might have three generations involved in the conversation and named in like the family constitution and all those things. So that can get us there. But they don't have family reunions. Ain't nobody worrying about no, what's your t-shirt size? Do you have your ticket for the cookout? Are you contributing to the scholarship banquet this year? They ain't talk about those things. They're having family retreats. And so a family retreat, and especially for us, right, who are navigating financial trauma and don't even know it, we can still have the fellowship. We can still, make sure that it's auntie's macaroni and cheese. Like, who made the macaroni and cheese? We can still do those things and build in time to have these discussions. So by the time a family is ready to have a family retreat, where there is an agenda, right? And on the agenda is a family wealth conversation and not just the scholarship banquet or the cookout. By the time you get to having a family retreat, you've already exposed your family to education. So you won't have a successful the outcome of that conversation won't be as successful unless we help people take the blinders off, unless we help people to unlearn. So really, my first point of contact when I'm working with families is to go through the history of Black wealth experience in America, because you need to know that somebody down the line lost their money to the United States financial services industry, and that's why you feel some type of way when it's time for you to walk into a bank. You need to know that the American government wrote the book on redlining, and that's why you had to take out student loans, because there was no wealth in your family, right? Because your grandfather didn't get his World War II GI Bill. You have to know those things, because you need to also understand why you have so much mistrust with each other. Because it was nine children that grandma had, and only one of them name was on the deed to the house. And now that auntie or that uncle is the one, don't nobody like their kids, but don't nobody know why. So we have to have those conversations. We have to have that education before we can get to the place where, okay, this is something that we might need to consider to preserve our family wealth. And those conversations happen at the family retreat.
Wow. And what about the I touched on it, the jealousy point of view of, okay, well, you know what, I'm you appointed him and her the CEO, but I'm on that person's level too. Why not me?
And that's where, so a part of the work that I do is financial therapy. So this is where we take these therapeutic models for healing, for reconciliation, and you apply them to your relationships with money. So between financial therapy and family mediation, because as sometimes we do need Iyanla to come up and through this thing and help to navigate these conversations, so that point of jealousy is what's happening, What's your own lived experience? How are you walking through life? Because we think about a lot of times people are reacting, not they, you aren't reacting to me. You're reacting to something that I show you about you. I just happen to be who you're taking it out on. So this is where the family mediation and the financial therapy takes place, but also making sure that you even know, maybe I didn't even know you would want to be in that role, but did I ask? Right? So there's a two-way responsibility there. And that's where when we're talking about the wealth of knowledge and capturing the passion, skills, and abilities of different family members, that will come out in those kinds of conversations.
Dr. Latanya White,
Thank you.
fam, you came on Black Men Sundays, tore it down. We're
Thank
gonna
you.
have to have you back on the show if you're willing.
I'm willing. I'll be ready when you're ready. Like, we can even record something homecoming because I know I'm gonna see you.
So I appreciate you. I appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on Black Men Sundays, Dr. Latanya White.
Thank you. I appreciate y'all so much.
It's a Black Man Sunday.